Hey, what's up? This is John Fink, and,
what are we calling this?
What are we calling this? That's a good question.
I mean, you launched that in, like, this is the beginning of the show.
Well, it should be the beginning of the show, man. We were debating this. So I like mise en scène, because it's a play on mise en scène.
But I feel like if you're going to call it obscene, there's going to be some obscenity with it.
Oh,
this is not. I thought this was a family show.
That's a family show.
Like, babies are going to listen to this.
Babies are going to learn in the womb.
I've got my first niece coming. I want her to listen to this.
You want her to listen to this?
Yeah, I want this to be what she listens to, like Baby Mozart. She'll be Baby Thinking Right.
She comes out, she's like, I want to go to the movies.
That's right, I want to go to the movies.
She's going to go to the movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure, because we're going to have a little rotating cast of characters, I think. We're still kind of like, this is still like raw. It's just like raw and real. You guys are getting the real raw mixtape kind of stuff. They're going to sell us on cassette tapes on the streets and barbershops.
This is street podcast.
This is street podcast.
Yeah, this is like, you know, stuff from The Wire kind of thing. You know, I mean, this is uncut, unstepped on podcast.
Uncircumcised is what you're saying.
I'm not saying that. That's something you brought up.
Wow. Okay. All right.
So, I'm Mike Reif, and this is either Fink on Film or Mise en Scène, depending on which continent you're on, which country, which state, you know?
I'm
a New York native. He's a New Jersey native.
That's how we roll.
You like Bruce Springsteen. I like you, too. I don't know what that says about me, because I'm not from Ireland.
I don't know, either. You got to have a national identity. I mean, you're from Western New York, so maybe the Goo Goo Dolls can be your,
Goo Goo Dolls. We did grow up listening to it. That was pretty good.
I like their old, like, 80s days, like, when they were still, like, gritty and raw. Like, that was, like, that was the, like, Jed. That was, like, a great album.
Right.
That was like raw Buffalo punk. And then they moved to L.A. and they got soft, you know?
Well, when you leave or come to Buffalo, generally you get a little soft. Look at Vincent Gallo. He was soft when he was here, and he's soft now that he left.
I don't think he's a soft man.
I don't know. He's doing those
I saw Brown Bunny. I don't think he's a soft man.
Not sure what you mean by that. Okay.
Welcome to Mise en Scène. I'm John Fink. So who the hell are you, Mike?
Okay, well, I'm Mike Reif. I'm a visiting professor right now to Onondaga Community College. And right this semester, I'm focusing on some writing projects. In about a week, we'll be getting the final revisions done on a paper I'm writing about Jonah Hex, the 2010 film. It's going to be going into an anthology.
Megan Fox,
you always bring that up. I like to think of it as Josh Brolin.
Best part of the movie, Megan Fox. So.
Okay. And that's going to be going into a book, with or without me, hopefully with me, called Undead in the West.
Okay.
And it's going to be published in the fall through Scarecrow Press. And then I'm also working on a new paper for a conference in the fall in Milwaukee about the film Valhalla Rising by Nicholas Winding Refn.
Yeah, that's a great filmmaker.
Sort of the way that humanity can't set up structures that last, whether or not you're pagan or Christian or Native American. That seems to be the film saying. That's not me. That's the film saying.
That's the film saying that, yeah.
And then I think I have a couple more projects, but they're not coming to mind. So what are you working
on,
John?
Well, I'm working on my first feature film. I'm working on my thesis film. I kind of just announced all of a sudden, slowly, that it was going to be a screenplay that I've been working on for years called Brandonwood. Those that know me back in New Jersey know I've been, like, thinking about this movie for years. And finally, it's going to see the light of day, I hope. So we have a campaign over at Indiegogo, which is a crowdfunding site is the word I'm looking for. It's indiegogo.com/Brandonwood Film. We're also going to be posting up some video updates there, and Mike and I are going to be starring in a video update that we did right before this.
That's right. Yeah. I will not be starring in Brandonwood, but I will be starring in all video updates.
Yes, but he was the first sponsor of the film, so he gave me $5 before my beautiful mother did. So
$5 whole.
Yeah, thank you.
I think this tea we're drinking was more expensive than that. But
yes. This tea is wonderful.
So besides paying your taxes, what have we been up to this month?
Well, I just got back from South by Southwest. I was covering it for a website that I write for, thefilmstage.com. Shout out to Jordan, Dan, and the team there. And I was down there with two other dudes, a guy named Josh Blackburn from San Francisco and another guy named Bill. I've drawn a blank on his last name. He was from Texas. He actually had a Texas accent. And we had a great time at South by. We saw a lot of movies and even some music. I went to go see Counting Crows at Auditorium Shores.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, I wanted to go see Eve Six and Bruce Springsteen, but
Couldn't get into the boss.
Couldn't get into the boss. Couldn't get any, even to Eve 6. I was going to relive my 8th grade days. I was going to start out with Bruce with Counting Crows at Auditorium Shores. That's a free show outside. Beautiful weather.
Okay.
Come over to see Eve 6. That was packed. I ended up going across town, long story short, to a hip-hop showcase. It was That's Racist and Spank Rock, and it was It was in a tin barn, dude. Let me tell you, it was incredible. It was in a tin barn, like on the other end of town. When it would like reverb, the bass would just, and then it would just right and back in the barn, and it felt like you were standing in a drum. It was in freaking insane.
That's great.
It was awesome.
Yeah, it sounds like a great experience. Well, let's talk about movies. I mean, obviously things can get a little insider baseball when you talk about film festivals, and nobody has been there, but what are the top three that you saw that either big ones or little ones that really you think are either going to go places, or even if they don't go places, matter?
You know, the thing is, I hate to say it this year at South By, I didn't really see anything that I absolutely fell in love with. I saw a lot of good films. I saw a lot of films that were really interesting. A lot of good documentaries. I mean, I sort of, when we write for Film Stage, the way it kind of works out is there's usually like another writer or two there, and they usually try to cover some of the more fanboy type of things. So they're going to see the 21 Jump Streets and the Casa de Mi Padre. There's nothing wrong with that. Those are all fun movies.
Yeah.
And then I get freed to go see documentaries and stuff. And occasionally Jordan Ropp, who's the editor there, will say, "Hey dude, can you go focus on this? Can you cover this for me?" And you know, I do that, but a lot of the times it's great, 'cause I don't get my balls broken. I get to go see whatever. I think a couple really interesting, two documentaries, both by women filmmakers, that were really great were Scarlet Road, which is a movie about a woman who is a sex worker in New South Wales. In Australia.
Okay.
And it's the only states in Australia, or maybe even one of the few places in the world where prostitution is actually legal or sex work is legal.
Right.
And she caters.
Out in the open, legal.
Yeah. Yep. But she's a woman in her 30s. She caters to men that are wheelchair bound, so paraplegics and men with disabilities mostly. Hmm. And really, it's sort of about like humanizing them. It's a very compassionate, pro sex work documentary. It's a really kind of an interesting take on that. I mean, she's not somebody, she doesn't allow them to penetrate them. She's usually, as she describes it, a couple body slides and a wank. But there's a couple really beautiful things in that movie that stand out. There's a guy there that she has several, I think, like a very severe case of cerebral palsy, and his fantasy is to spend the night with someone. And
right.
His parents and him save up the money, and she agrees to spend the night with him in bed, and really just sort of that companionship, and that was really good. The other one, also kind of weirdly about trade, I guess you could say, is Seeking Asian Female, which is about Debbie Lum directed it. And it's rare that you see a film she's an Asian woman, directed from, or where the camera's perspective is captured, or is from the perspective of somebody who's a fetish object. So it's about a guy, or it follows this guy, he's in his 60s, he's he works as a parking garage attendant, and he has this, really, really loves Asian women. And so he has one date that doesn't quite work out. He actually goes and it doesn't really quite work out. And then he has a woman that lives in with him. And it's one of these, it's sort of like a Nina Davenport documentary. It's a first person perspective. And she becomes, the filmmaker becomes the translator in their arguments, which is really good.
Yeah.
A couple of good comedies. Frankie Goes Boom with Jordan Roberts, directed by Jordan Roberts. Really, really a good flick too. A couple other things that were pretty good too that I saw. Matthew Lewis' directorial debut, that was, that's okay. I'm going through the
book now. Well, it's Matthew Lewis.
Yeah. A really good documentary called Eating Alabama about a guy who challenged himself to eat locally. And
very cool.
Really, really good. They actually had a really good Eating Alabama food plate, the Alamo Draft House. You go to the Alamo, they've got food there. They had a really great local food plate. Electric Children, another movie, which was fascinating about a girl who's a Mormon, raised in a very strict Mormon household. Fundamentalist, this sort of looks like the past, almost like Shemlon's The Village, and she runs away and goes in search of something. And Dodecapentathlon, which is the other new Duplass Brothers movie, was made 4 years ago before Baghead. So I'm just rambling here. Talk, Mike. What have you seen lately?
Well, we're going to get into, you know, best three movies probably we've seen this month.
Oh.
I think we're going to do a little segment on that so we can kind of focus and coagulate and all those other words that mean bring together. But before we run out, you know, SXSW, we'll talk about the food. Because I'm a huge food fan. Buffalo's a great food city. What
food it's at Austin.
Yeah, what's the best thing you ate there?
Bro, the food was incredible.
Yeah.
It's a lot of barbecue, a lot of Mexican food. There's a really good... I don't remember the names of these places, you know, because I was, like, staying in this one hotel, and I was walking down the street to go to Whole Foods. I was going to get dinner at Whole Foods, be healthy. Not a chance. Barbecue trucks left and right. You know,
you
just pass by, you get a really good, like, you know, barbecue chicken sandwich from you know, some guy. They got the big, like, deep pit tits going on there. It's delicious stuff. You just don't want to not have it when you're down there. Alamo Draft House 2's also got pretty good food. They're like, they bring you food and beer and everything while you're at the movies.
Mm.
It's a pretty incredible experience. Otherwise, I mean, the food trucks there, they really know food trucks well.
Mm.
I know in Buffalo they're trying to outlaw them. Austin, they've got, you know, they have like a Cuban pork and chicken place that was really good. That was probably one of the best things I had. Miguel's Cubana out of a truck. And then it's good tacos and stuff, too. I mean, it's just, you can kind of get pretty much anything. It's all fresh. The guacamole is fresh. They literally throw the avocados over the wall from Mexico.
Wow.
Austin's an amazing city for food, amazing city for culture and music. It's sort of like a really awesome mecca of creativity. And South By is just, it's expanding very rapidly. But
Sounds great.
My second year, so I'm part of that expansion, so I really shouldn't complain.
Yeah.
About the city's changed so much.
Right, right. Yeah.
Yuppies go home.
Yeah. Well, okay, so what? Let's think about Hunger Games here.
Oh, I didn't see Hunger Games. We're recording this. Everybody in America went to go see it. Mike went to go see it. I didn't go see it because I was just like, I was tired. I was like, I don't want to go see a 2-hour, 17-minute movie. I'm going to go see 21 Jump Street.
Yeah, and we could talk about those two films, but before we get into it, what do you think about this marketing campaign?
The marketing campaign?
Because, you know, I go to see it yesterday, and I'm at the, I go to the Regal Carousel Mall in Syracuse, New York, and I'm going to go see the 11:50 showing. It's about 9:30, and all these children come pouring in.
Yeah, in the morning?
In the morning.
Okay.
And they're coming up the escalator, about 250.
Are they on spring break?
This is a field trip.
Field trip.
And I'm thinking to myself, how has a film about children killing children been able to do it this well? And I haven't seen the box office receipts yet, but I know that it made the most money out of a non-sequel, and it's only its midnight showing ever.
This is kind of a tasteless question, but was the book written before or after Columbine?
I believe it's written after Columbine.
Huh.
I think so.
But it's about reality TV and obsession with those kinds of things, right, I think?
Yes.
I haven't read the books or seen the movies. I just have seen the trailers.
Right. And, yeah, let's think about this. I mean, here's a film that's going to do extremely well. Obviously, it's going to make huge amounts of money, and even though it's a film that is PG-13, and I'll talk about this later, because this is one of the best films I've seen in the last month.
Really?
Easily.
But you saw Separation last night.
I saw it today.
I saw it today.
But the thing about it, the trailer doesn't in any way indicate that this is a film about kids killing kids, really. They talk about the games. You see them start to go. But if you watched it, you would think they're just going to go hunt some animals.
Yeah, some of those images in the first part of the trailer were disorienting because they look a lot like some of the archival footage in Alan Rene's Night and Fog of the Holocaust. And
that's true.
And I was disoriented, and then I realized, oh, we're in the future. We're not in the... I thought it was a Holocaust film, actually, from the first couple frames of the trailer.
Yeah. Yeah, and so just to start, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, promotional materials, what you think about trailers, what you think about marketing campaigns. You know, my take, having seen the film, without really giving anything away about the film yet, is that I think there needs to be some sort of... I like trailers that don't give away stuff. I would like to see non-narrative trailers, so just give images, maybe give a small snippet of narrative to let you know what a story's about.
Mm-hmm.
But with this kind of film, I'm curious to know what the reaction from audiences are, because there's stuff in this. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of the kids that were showing up yesterday on that school trip have probably read the novel. They know what they're in for. But I'm always wondering, what happens when you go to a film and you just don't realize this is a movie about kids killing kids? Or you don't realize that there's going to be people getting shot in the head in Batman Dark Knight.
Mm.
You know, these sometimes you don't want to give away things, but sometimes the material is so intense. I wonder, you know, how do people feel when this kind of thing happens? I'm not talking about Tree of Life. You know, okay. People went to Tree of Life and thought it was a Brad Pitt movie.
There was an exhibitor in Connecticut that was warning people. They were like, this isn't a non-narrative film. You're entering you're in a zone where your mind is going to wander. Just be warned. We're not giving you a refund.
But I'm always wondering, you know, how does it... I think what it really comes down to is also, it's not just what's in the trailer, but what's at the end. That letter, the PG-13 or the R.
Yeah.
I think sometimes if you heighten the PG-13 or the R, you're going to get the wrong idea of what a film is going
to be. That's a huge issue nowadays with Bully, with Harvey Weinstein trying to overturn Bully. I think the rating system, because, you know, I think it's complete bullshit, quite frankly. It's arbitrary. You know, I would often say when I was a kid and I was frustrated when I was, you know, 16, 15, couldn't get into R-rated movies, I'm like, but the movie Crossroads came out, and it basically says that you should, you know, lose your virginity to a dangerous-looking older guy because he drives a cool car. I mean, that was the moral of the Britney Spears movie Crossroads.
Right.
You know, and I couldn't go see, and subsequently that same, whatever, year, I couldn't go see John Sayles' Limbo, because they used the F word 3 times or 4 times.
Right.
And it's like, you've got to be kidding me, like, it's you know, what logic is this? This doesn't make any sense whatsoever, but Jack Valenti, the MP, head of the MPA at the time, would say, well, you know, we get more complaints about language than we do violence, and, you know, we're just trying to make everybody happy. And then you got into the debate of, you know, the reason the MPA kind of came into being is to sort of kill off or to sort of eliminate the need for local censorship boards. So you get the idea, okay, so maybe a kid in New York City is maybe a little bit more sophisticated about these things, and they have a certain barometer for a tolerance to these things that, you know, a kid in sort of rural Kentucky may not have that barometer or that exposure or that life experience to be able to unpack these things critically.
And know how to handle it.
Yeah, know how to handle it. So maybe there's a difference there. But I think, it is rough for the national rating system. But I think... With regards to the trailers, I mean,
sort of building off what we were thinking about in the last podcast about how to bring people in, and something we didn't talk a lot about is sort of the promotional aspect.
Yeah,
I mean, do you think that the trailers? I find trailers.
I think a big event movie is fantastic for anything. I mean, you know, it spills over. I think it's good. I think anything gets people excited about going to the movies. And exhibitors got to, you know, they have to realize that people are complaining about the prices being too high. They're probably too high. I mean,
right, and of course, Ebert just had on his Facebook page this idea that we're kind of balancing out the 2D and 3D price. 3D's going down, 2D's going up, sort of penalizing 2D only viewers.
I take that with a grain of salt, though, because if you looked at where it was linked from a guy who runs a very small exhibitor, kind of a boutique exhibitor, Spotlight Theaters, and they're trying to open a theater in Hartford, Connecticut. I'm not really sure what to make of that. I know Dipson actually lowered 3D ticket prices as well, but they didn't raise their price. They sort of were like kind of keeping, Gibson's our local exhibitor in Buffalo, they sort of keep things kind of at like a reasonable for families to go to the movies. I think in Buffalo is not really, you know, the richy rich areas, but then, you know, you get AMC where they have their chicken finger combo with $17.25 at Palisades Center Mall, and I was like, you've got to be crazy. I'm just going to wait to go eat after we get out of the movie. But I think that's part of it. I think, you know, promotions are good, but I think they're only... You know, you think about, like, I don't think it's promotions alone. I think it's really the awareness of the books there, because you think about, like, you know, if there wasn't the awareness there, Lionsgate spent $70 million or whatever, $80 million on making The Hunger Games.
Right.
It could have very easily been a flop. I mean, John Carter from Mars is a flop because I think...
$250 gone into that.
Yeah, I think because, you know, they nobody really knows what the hell the movie's about.
Right.
Bill Maher made that joke. He goes, John Carter, I think I sat next to that kid in Homeroom. What's the movie about?
And, you know, there's a trailer for John Carter that does establish what the narrative is, and yet people still don't understand, you know, what the conflict, what the themes, why I'm going to go sit down and see this thing. They see a man leaping through the air. Maybe he starts out in the Wild Wild West and gets there, maybe not. But we get the story, but we don't understand the actual essence of the movie.
Yeah.
And with Hunger Games, I think we get the essence. And even if you haven't read the books, you sort of see where it's going.
Right.
And you know, my main critique is maybe you're not preparing the audience, but it's sort of a side thing. I mean, do you feel like the state of trailers is good right now? Do you think we're getting what we need?
Is it really that violent that you're shaken and disturbed about it 2 days later that you're...
I'm not personally, but, you know, the concept that kids are killing kids. And there's a montage in the film that is pretty intense. You know, the editing is done fairly well, obtuse, and I think the editing is done really well to create a sort of a great scene. But to sort of obfuscate some of the violence, it's pretty good. But just the idea of it, the actual notion that this is happening is pretty extreme. Yeah. Do you think the trailers are where they need to be? Do you think the promotions are doing a good job of sort of setting up and selling a film?
I do. I mean, I hate to say it. I try to know as very little about a movie going into it, but I guess I'm more of an adventurous movie goer. Like right. South by, literally, there's an app called South by Southwest Go. It tells you what's going on around you, and then you can just go, okay, I'm hungry, it's lunchtime, there's a movie that's 80 minutes long at Alamo Draft House, I'm going to go. So I meant to know as little as possible going in. I think the trailers do have some sort of responsibility, particularly in hinting at certain things or certain extremes, but at the same time, there is something to just being completely surprised. But I mean, as a parent of a kid, I don't have a kid, not that I know of anyway, that
you're... Things happen down at South
by. No comment. But you want to make sure that you have the sort of the knowledge to prepare them. My mom always would tell me, "Oh, it's all fake, honey. It's all fake."
Right.
Which is one strategy of doing that.
It's but a very effective film is going to be able to transcend that fakeness, no matter how many times you're told it's fake.
I think being told that it's fake, though, gives you this sort of critical distance where you can say, I can judge how well this is done. I can judge how well that, you know, they cut off that guy's ear in Reservoir Dogs because, you know, whereas instead of saying, oh, my God, they cut off a man's ear in Reservoir Dogs, this is so horrible, make this stop, I could sort of say, well, that was really well done. That Tarantino has really got a command of things.
Yeah. You know, my other big critique, though, would be having seen Chronicle recently. Did you see Chronicle?
I did see Chronicle. I liked it a lot.
I found the ad campaign for that.
Made
the movie look horrible. And I think the problem there, the other flip side of this, is that the people who did Hunger Games are trying to make sure, and I read an article about this, they were trying to make sure we didn't say anything about the killing. We didn't say that 23 are going to die. We only said that one was going to win. It's a very specific strategy they did. With Chronicle, they seem to be hiding the more important and the deeper and the more emotional aspects of the film.
The flip side is that some
studios, whether or not they're big or small, are sometimes afraid to embrace these things.
Yeah.
In terms of Hunger Games, because it's controversial, but in terms of Chronicle, I think it's because I didn't feel like audiences were either interested or ready for a film of that depth and complexity.
Which I think is ridiculous, because I think even if you go back to the first two, maybe three Spider-Man films, I think that's what people connected to. They connected to a real character. I mean, Chronicle it's really quite a brutal movie about like abuse in a family.
Absolutely.
It's a really very well done movie that is pretty explicit about these things, and they did kind of sell it as a, you know, the trailer didn't make me want to go see it. I might have like caught up with it later, but Ebert's review, which was a 3.5-star review, which is fair. People were acting posted on my Facebook wall like, did it suck? And I'm like, no, it's actually very good. You should go see it. Yeah. You're right. There are certain studios that, you know, I think there are certain decisions that executives make that, you know, kind of hurt a movie or maybe, but then I think they sometimes redouble back and they sort of like, I remember when Easy A opened, it was at the Toronto International Film Festival, they released a different poster that had the laurels on it. You talked about laurels. You saw a DVD that I got at South by that a filmmaker gave
those little leaves around the award.
So I think, you know, you might draw people in, they see the laurels and they go, oh, that was a TIFF. That must be, you know, something a little bit, you know, a little bit more higher end than just your average kind of teen sex comedy. Let's go check it out. So I think they're definitely, I think they sort of redouble and sort of frame it, because I think those people that are interested in like maybe good filmmaking are not the ones that are exactly going to be there like opening night at 12:01.
Right.
They're the ones that might go see it the second or third week
and then
discover it and like it. And that's how movies kind of sustain or continue to have legs after. So I think maybe there are some decisions there where, you know, they get the critical quotes and stuff. But Chronicle was one of those movies that, you know, I wasn't prepared for just how good it was. It was one of the better films I've seen this year.
And I think, you know, my final point on this would be that I think people kind of, we look at box office receipts are going down. And there's sort of this apathy of filmgoers that I feel like I've seen it all. And I think if studios would advertise a film for what it really is. Yes, Chronicle is about superheroes, but it's also about abuse, and it's about sort of anger in the family. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd be able to at least sort of build into the consciousness of the viewership that films are a lot more diverse than you think.
Yeah.
Yes, we have a lot of superhero movies, but Chronicle is extremely different from X-Men 3.
Mm-hmm.
And Chronicle is also very different from Twilight, sort of another cousin of Chronicle, sort of that teen story involving supernatural aspects.
See, I think the other thing that Chronicle had going against it, whereas I think if it was based on a novel, they could advertise it as, having those emotional elements that would remind people of, this is why you love the novel, because you related to these characters. I think the odds are stacked against it, because Chronicle was an original screenplay.
Right.
And it only cost $12.5 million to make. So,
that's amazing.
It's a really well-made movie. I mean, there are a couple things I have... problems I have with it in terms of, like, maybe some of the ending with all those cameras and everybody's cell phone footage, that it kind of breaks that, like, tradition. Although I do wish I could levitate a camera with my mind.
That'd be
a much
cool.
better filmmaker. And have it be in focus and light balanced, I mean.
All the time.
Yeah, yeah. As a filmmaker, it was just like, oh.
What a superpower.
If only. That is a great superpower.
Yeah.
Make the epic movie. Yeah, it's a good flick. It's a good flick. What did you see Project X, speaking of this found footage stuff?
I've not seen it.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of Project X. I saw one, too, at South by Southwest. Actually, it's an actress who you should know. She's very good. Her name is Louisa Krause. She was in a movie. I can't really describe it. It was hard to describe. It was a movie called Toe to Toe. It was a lacrosse drama that may have been a coming-out movie, but spoiler alert, she doesn't really come out. She just sort of is like, I've got something to tell you. She's been spending a lot of time. She may be preggers or she may be coming out. It just kind of ends. It's a little frustrating movie. She's phenomenal in it. She's in a movie called King Kelly about a girl who's like a webcam model who gets into some trouble and everybody's all fucked up on drugs. And it's kind of like, it's a little bit like a Project X, a little bit harder core maybe. It's not pornographic, but a little bit like harder edged, I think. But a movie that I was sort of thinking, okay, maybe found footage has kind of jumped the shark if it's a little bit, or it's on the edge of jumping the shark. What do you think about that?
Well, on the whole, I don't think found footage is a very good idea. I think the logical limitations that should be placed on a found footage type of movie are going to hinder what you can show. And then if you go beyond those limitations, you're going to be making a leap of logic. Chronicle pushes it to a degree where the main character is able to use his telekinesis superpowers to move the camera. So that sort of gives you an out.
We should say that found footage has always been a genre typically reserved in the experimental,
an experimental
film. It's always existed. I remember doing actually found footage experiments in undergrad. So it's always been a tradition of experimental film.
Right.
But I think with sort of the awareness of web cameras and things, it just sort of is now becoming mainstream, and that that people have the ability to do these things. And King Kelly, they record on their iPhones this whole 2-day nightmare, 1-day nightmare. I don't know what kind of battery life they have. I don't know that kind of battery life on my iPhone. I mean, I'd go out for the whole day at South Pine, and I'd be on 10% by the time I got back to my hotel. But I don't know where I'm going with that. So I'm wondering, do you think they jumped the shark?
Well, I think there's probably two avenues that are happening right now. I think, to the idea that either they're going to be running into the ground. I think the idea that Project X is a found footage film, the reason why people are excited about it is not because of that. It's because it's super raunchy and keeps pushing the boundaries of here's a movie about a whole neighborhood going, combustible because there's a party there, less because of found footage.
It was like Frederick Wiseman crossed with Girls Gone Wild, crossed with
Mad Max.
Animal House, or Mad Max. Yeah.
Right.
There were some flamethrowers. Yeah, I mean, it was... There's something to be said about doing a film about that kind of party where you do sort of study the structure of it. But it wasn't,
The devolution.
It was fun. I had fun because I saw it in a theater that was not checking IDs, so...
Okay.
It was full of like underagers that were, and it was a fun time. I'm not gonna lie, it was enjoyable, but it wasn't. But I had some problems with it. Obviously, it wasn't all that compelling of a film.
And so either it's an issue of either the found footage becomes a redundant sort of trick, or you're gonna keep pushing. I mean, you can only do a Chronicle style out every once in a while.
And so
either it's going to be redundant or it's just going to become illogical. How can that camera go there? How can it be catching this? Why am I seeing what I'm seeing? And so I think in both ways, found footage is running up into two pretty unmovable walls.
Because there's limitations to found footage because you have to ground it within the perspective of somebody holding a camera or a security camera. And then you get Paranormal Activity 2, where I remember just seeing shots of like the pool cleaner over and over again. And I'm like, really? Like, this is like 5 minutes of the pool cleaner in this movie? Like,
and the thing about the found footage, I mean, let's think about Paranormal Activity 3, a film I didn't see.
Okay.
I know that there's a great shot in it where they mount the camera on a fan. It's rotating back and forth, and the found footage immerses you
on
in
an
this
oscillating
sequence,
fan,
an oscillating fan, and enables for a different style of scene and the tension that is built between going left and right, and things are happening on both left and right that you can't quite get a hold on. That's a great usage, but can a whole film do that? You know, you're going to have a very talented director to use it and leverage it. So a whole 90-minute film is interesting. Because otherwise, I saw the first one, and while there's some truly terrifying parts to that, a lot of it doesn't work because it's found footage, and there's limitations to it.
Yeah, I mean, that one kind of grounds the reason why the cameras are there. I think Paranormal Activity is going to fall apart in itself, or is slowly starting to fall apart in itself.
Yeah.
They keep making money. That's the thing, you know. In Hollywood, when anything keeps making money, it's bound to keep being repeated. It's just what happens. They say, you know, March of the Penguins did well. Instead of, you know, let's have more penguin movies.
Right.
We'll do Happy Feet, although Happy Feet 2 didn't do so well.
Didn't do so well. And you know, to its credit, I think the reason why people keep watching these things is because of that sense of realism. Also, the sense of I could be doing this. I think people like, especially these days with sort of the Facebook, Twitter, YouTube generation.
Yeah.
I don't have maybe the time, resources, or eye to make these films, but theoretically I could do it. So I think that's the reason why people keep showing up is, A, it looks like some place I could be,
yeah.
but also it's also something I could do. And I appreciate that aspect of it, sort of the democratization of a narrative, but...
I think, though, that people go to the movies to... And I was thinking about this actually with Project X and King Kelly. I just sort of, like, did an informal kind of, like, thought process of, like, okay, how many people, like, because they're heavily, people are using drugs in these movies, and I'm thinking to myself, I wonder how many of my friends have actually done this stuff.
Right.
And I thought maybe, I estimate maybe half, which is probably too conservative, I don't know. I think maybe half, but
right.
but out of my circle of friends, maybe we're having, so I think for the other half, like me, who I've drank before, but I have a very clean life, man, as you know.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Very clean life, never tried any drugs. I think that it becomes a form of, like, escapism for us, or at a certain point for us, like, with King Kelly, it's like, really, like, you're going to, like, do ecstasy and drive down the street, and then you're going to crash into a bush, like,
right.
It's sort of like this, like, frustrated thing, like, real, but I mean, maybe it's a way for adults to sort of relive, like, the period of teenhood being invincible.
Yeah.
Chronicle, even to that point, is all about being invincible. But
that's true.
I think maybe that's the attraction to these things for the teen genre and Project X and King Kelly and Chronicle. As for the Paranormal Activities, I think Blair Witch was kind of a found footage film, I suppose. I mean, it's grounded very clearly in who's holding the camera and what they're doing with the camera and the process of filmmaking. There hasn't really been a good one. I want Jean-Luc Godard to do one.
Mm-hmm.
I think if Godard did one, it'd be very angry, very very political, but it'd be fascinating.
And, you know, the last thing I would say about this is I think another part that draws people is sort of that visceral energy.
Yeah.
The realism, the immediacy of it, and yet, you know, I think about
narrative though. I mean, I get sick of these movies where there are people that are quote unquote filmmakers. And there was a bad movie I saw actually. I blocked this one out. Oh my god, called Shooting April, which was basically it started as Jackass and ended up with rape.
Mm.
It was that kind of movie. Terrible movie. It was at the Buffalo International Film Festival. I went to see it. There was 12 people in the theater. It was me and the projectionist. By the time the movie was over, I had to review it. And it was one of these movies that just sort of was like it tested your tolerance for watching it. So basically.
Right.
You know, if I didn't walk out, I was a bad person.
Right.
I think that's what the moral of the story was. I hated it, and I gave it a bad review, so maybe I'm not a bad person. But I think that's, you know, there's something to... Where was I going with that idea? I was on to something good. I think that's definitely something that these films can be playing with. But what I'm sick of is these quote-unquote people that are filmmakers in these movies that are just terrible at composing shots.
Well, that's the thing, and as much as, you know, having Project X be out there and be showing sort of that party experience and the extreme of it, I still look back and think, you know, one of the most intense sequences of drug use I've ever seen on film is Easy Rider.
Uh-huh.
Dennis Hopper.
Not Requiem?
Requiem for a Dream, but even Easy Rider in the cemetery at the end of that film.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
And you can't do something like that with found footage because of the editing and the absolute artistry that goes into that.
Yeah.
I mean, these people are falling apart, their minds are being ravaged, and you could have that situation in a found footage film, but there's no way that it could ever have that impact. And I think as much as it's an interesting gimmick and in some ways really fits the narrative of a film, you're still going to be always at a loss. You can't do the things you can do with editing, with proper lighting. So. Yeah.
But did you see, just quickly on this topic again, A Day in the Life, or Life in a Day, Kevin McDonald's movie. It might even be on YouTube. It was actually funded by YouTube.
Hmm.
And it was an experiment where it's a really, it's sort of like a, it's almost like an IMAX documentary. It's like a nature doc about people from all over the world were submitting footage. They even sent some cameras to some places in the world that might not have access to cameras of their day. It was one day in the summer of 2010 or 2009. And they uploaded them all on YouTube within, like, 3 days. And it's a really phenomenal, like, portrait of... I mean, it's organized by sort of, like, fears and desires and love. It's got a very strict structure. Kevin McDonald directed it. He did Last King of Scotland the movie about the about Munich, the documentary. It was 3 days in September. Very good film. A talented filmmaker. Really knows what he's doing. A really good movie, but again, it was sort of like, it was more, I say it's crowdsourced versus like, like our Indiegogo campaigns, crowdsourced.
Well, let's think about, the best three things that we've seen this month. Starting with your least best.
My least
best. All positive stuff, but, you know, starting with number three, let's say, what would be the thing that stood out to you?
Oh man, I gotta think about this. So my least favorite movie of the year, I'm going through my South by Southwest catalog here. Why don't you start, Mike?
Well, you know, I'm gonna start with Hunger Games. Hunger Games is a good film. There's two other things I've seen that are head and shoulders above it. But, you know, what really grabs you about it is I'm thinking about the book, and I'm thinking about the audience, and I'm thinking about the reactions that I'm hearing as I'm watching it. And it's partly because I think that a lot of the people who are seeing this film have been sort of cinematically raised on things like Twilight.
Yeah.
Which is not a great film by editing, by writing, by directing. And finally they come to this film, which is done by the director of Seabiscuit and Pleasantville. And he's a friend of Steven Soderbergh. And be able to take a teen-led, a young adult fiction book, and to make it into something that is relatively maturely done, cinematically. Editing's very polished. The music's very polished. Cinematography's great. To have an incredible cast. Jennifer Lawrence holds it down from Winter's Bone. Even Lenny Kravitz turns in a very good performance. I think that's a great thing. I think when we think about young adult fiction, usually the film kind of gets shortchanged, Harry Potter being the exception. And I think that's probably because of so many of the British people. You get British people, it's going to be good.
Yeah.
But for something that is primarily an American feature, this is, I think, a pretty big move. And I was happy to see it done so well. Has that edge to it, has the edge that you would expect that the subject material would have. But it also has a great deal of polish. And I'm glad to see finally we have one of these widely read young adult fiction books turned into something that's good, but also enduring and, you know, can probably withstand the test of time. I know as we continue, I've read some articles, the second and third books get progressively harder to film, so I'm going to be interested also to see how they build off that. Because this is a good director, and it'll be interesting to see how he gets pushed into some different directions. So.
Okay. I thought of three. I'm actually going to talk about three from South by Southwest I have not talked about that are phenomenal.
Okay, let's
phenomenal
hear.
Films. Do you want to do your two more, or do you want me to
do something? Your number three.
Oh, we'll do my number three. My number three is actually, I mean, I don't know if it's one of my favorite movies from South by, but it's a really good film we didn't chat about. It's a movie called Crazy Eyes by Adam Sherman, and it stars Lucas Haas and Melanie Zima. It's about an alcoholic actor, and it's one of these movies, it was on kind of the tip of my tongue as we were talking about King Kelly and Project X. That's really the very, very dark, dark side of this. It's a guy who, he's a millionaire. We don't know how he made his millions. We suspect he might be an actor. Lucas Haas plays him. And he's a guy who really kind of has a miserable existence. He's got a son and an ex-wife that is a little on the crazy side. He drinks, literally every night, every day, every morning. He's constantly hungover. It's just sort of a cycle. Jake Busey plays, I didn't see this movie, I'm not making this up, plays his friend who
it sounds like it's made up when you put a Busey in there.
he plays his friend who's a bartender, he's also kind of a minor coke dealer, but a really just depressing movie, he's a guy who becomes infatuated by this girl who he calls Crazy Eyes, and he's sort of have, like, you know, because he's sort of got the money and really to kind of, like, have any women woman that he wants. But it's really about, like, when the party gets dark, like that point of the night when things get dark and it goes from being fun to people getting punched in the face and crying and getting upsetting. And it's
right.
It's one of these movies that, like, takes it to the edge constantly. It's really well done. It has not a lot of restraint, which was actually why I think I gave it a B plus or an A minus in my review at Film Stage. But a really well-crafted, well-told film that is actually, I think, going to have a theatrical release. It's going to be released by Strand Releasing in the U.S., so
okay.
I'm not sure if it's going to come to Buffalo or it's going to be more of a video-on-demand kind of thing, but it's going to be somewhere. And it's going to be around, so it's not one of these movies that'll go out into the ether. It'll probably surface, sometime this year, hopefully.
Yeah.
It's a good flick. I'd definitely seek it out.
You know, Hunger Games, I'm not sure if that's ever going to make it to the theaters.
Oh, yeah, that's a small,
that might only be on demand, too.
Quiet little art house movie, yeah.
My number two, I'm thinking, I just picked this up on DVD. I know you saw this in the theater, but Pedro Almodovar's most recent film, Skin I Live. I watched this.
Sick movie.
And for those people who know Almodovar, I did films like All About My Mother and Talk to Her. And this one has Antonio Banderas as a plastic surgeon whose daughter is raped, and he catches the rapist, and throughout the film transforms him into a woman.
Oh, God, you're giving away the whole movie.
Well, I feel like if you've seen it, you've seen it. If not, not. What I find fascinating about Almodovar, though, is just the consistency of his ability.
Yes.
The plot, I almost feel these days in his films, has sort of become extraneous. I feel like, you know, that one he did before this with Penelope Cruz, whose title is completely...
Volvaire?
Not Volvaire.
Not Volvaire.
This is the thing about him.
Oh, no. Broken Embraces.
Broken Embraces. Right. I've forgotten the title, and I've forgotten the story, and yet his ability is so strong. It's not just the visuals. Like, Tarsem is a very visual director, but the way
you love Tarsem. He's your homeboy.
I do like Tarsem. But Almodovar is one of those few directors who, from the beginning, I mean, he's been working for, 40 years now? 35?
Something like that, yeah.
It's so steady, and it doesn't need to improve. He's got a very specific style, but it seems timeless. Hitchcock seems to be brought up more and more as he sort of makes more of these twisty thrillers. But I think for directors, you know, Spielberg comes and goes, Fincher comes and goes, but there's something about Almodovar that is so polished and is so mature and is so accomplished.
I don't know about mature, but he's... You know the thing
There's always something wild and sort of deviant about his films in the subject material, but as his craftsmanship, I found, just is unceasingly perfect.
You know, the thing about that movie is the first maybe hour of that movie, it could have been directed by Adam McGoin. It's just like, it's almost like a Swiss watch. It's like a finely tuned watch. It's just so perfect in its visuals and its buildup, and it's so intriguing, even though you have no idea what's going on. And then when things are pulled back, it becomes like a John Waters movie, and you're like, John Waters could have made this movie, except for the fact that it's really, like, John Waters, and I love John Waters, he's got no restraint. He's like the grandfather of gross-out comedy.
Right.
But, so it's weird, because it's sort of like taking this John Waters plot, I mean, really, the fact that he gives a vaginoplasty to a rapist, is just so, and transforms him, is just so out there that it's
right.
that it you know, it could have been a John Waters movie.
Yeah, and so the subject material seems so bizarre.
Yeah.
And he's always been doing it. He seems to be fascinated with
But even just the fact that rapist is wearing a lion costume and
yeah, there's another rapist earlier, right. And so all that's very weird, but still there's this constant
tiger costume.
Astonishing craft. And I don't understand how he can keep doing it. You know, Spielberg has made a lot of films, but some of his films don't have that Spielbergian touch.
I thought his two movies this year were good.
Very good.
I thought War Horse was good. People took a dump on War Horse. I liked it.
Loved it.
You know, War Horse made more money in this country than, I think we talked about that last time, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Made more money than Tintin. But not in Paris, or in France, right? They really love their Tintin there.
What's your number two?
My number two. I'm going to go with a movie. It's very, very small. It needs some props. It's called... Daylight Savings. I'm on the wrong page here. Daylight Savings is actually a sequel to a movie that I didn't see last year that was at South By. And it follows this guy, Goh Nakamura. He's an Asian-American in San Francisco. He's a recording artist. And he's playing himself in this movie. And it's about his relationships. He breaks up with his girlfriend over a web camera, shot in black and white. It's a short tiny little movie, but it's a really kind of like just a beautiful, soulful kind of movie that you want to see like on a Sunday afternoon. Like it's the kind of movie that just is sort of like perfect to kind of see and then have the sun set when you walk out of the movie theater. It doesn't have distribution. I hope it does. I know it's going to be playing at some Asian American film festivals, probably, you know, throughout, but it's a really, really good film. I don't know why my thing just turned on, but hopefully we still have more juice. I'm sorry, Mike. So what's your next one?
Well, probably the best thing I've seen, this month is another smaller film, not as small as what you just brought up, but yeah. It's Texas Killing Fields.
Oh, yeah, with
and
this Sam is your Worthen. Number one movie of the month.
This is the best thing I've seen, and I can't stop thinking about this film. And it's, you know, it's sort of the opposite of The Skin I Live In, technically, mm-hmm. where it's directed by Michael Mann's daughter, whose first name escapes me right now, but it stars Sam Worthington and has the girl from Kick-Ass in it. I can't remember her name either.
Zoe, Chloe Moretz?
Yeah, Chloe Moretz. Yep.
Moretz, hit and, girl. Yes.
And Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Okay.
And it's about detectives.
I get him confused with Javier Bardem. They look alike.
Right.
Don't
well,
they?
Sort of like a poor man's Javier, but...
poor man's Javier Bardem.
He's extraordinary.
Shit
film.
On Henry Dean Morgan.
But this is a film about detectives in Texas, and there's a section in their state called the Killing Fields that are notorious for being places where crimes happen and bodies are dumped and people don't go. Police don't go. Criminals stay out of. Just a bad place. And the mood that she's able to set and some of the scenes in it, she knows how to really film space exquisitely.
Uh-huh.
And there's one sequence where Sam Worthington, as this police officer, is hunting two criminals he feels are part of this ongoing investigation.
Yeah.
And the way she's able to shoot it is disorienting, and yet you understand where everything is in relationship to everything else.
Uh-huh.
It's an extraordinary ability to really shoot space and show space and make tension out of just a location.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the performances are great. Some aren't so great. Filmically, not all the editing is perfect. But it's just such a gripping and original film
mm-hmm.
that I can't stop thinking about it.
I think there's a TIFF this year.
Everybody's got to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so my film, my actually, is another very gripping film. Doesn't have distribution yet. But it's by a guy named Craig Zobel. And Craig Zobel made a movie a couple of years ago that I didn't really love. It was called Wide World of Sound. It was kind of a comedy with a little bit of like a Beastie Boys kind of flair to it.
Okay.
But not really the best kind of movie about a record salesman. Not the greatest movie. This one, however, is based on a true story. It's based on a it basically begins as a guy is calling in a prank to a fast food restaurant. And where it goes, I don't want to give anything away, but it basically, as a guy who's pretending to be a cop, forces the detainment and then a whole bunch of other horrible things to a young, like, 18-year-old girl, and it's based on a true story. So as a cop, you know, he's saying, you know, we need you to search her. We need you to search her purse. And you can imagine where this goes. And just sort of that, like, it's one of these movies where, you know, you're sort of, like, standing up in your seat going, why doesn't somebody call the police station and verify this is really happening?
Right.
But it's based on a true story. This actually happened at a chain of, I'm not sure what fast food chain, but it's inspired by true events. It's got a really strong performance by Dreamo Walker. Is that right? This is from the South by Southwest notes here. It was at Sundance, and it was kind of a sensation there, but a really phenomenal film, Compliance. It's definitely worth checking out. It doesn't have distribution yet, but I'm going to guess it's going to be a big hit, or it's going to cause a lot of dialogue when it does surface, and hopefully it'll be sooner than later.
Yeah.
Somebody pick up this movie. It's
sounds
phenomenal.
Incredibly intense. Yeah.
It's one of these movies that takes place in a very kind of like close quarters, mostly in like the back of this fast food restaurant. It's one of these movies you don't want to go to the bathroom. You don't want to go to the snack bar. You're just on the edge of your seat. It's just a well-crafted, this guy, Craig Zobel, really just has a really strong command of editing and how to move the camera, and it's one of these movies that's just really so finely etched on every level. That's actually Janet Pearson's. But another thing I want to talk quickly about and just overall trends at South by Southwest, and we didn't talk about these films, but there's a lot of movies I saw about people going to the woods.
Hmm.
I felt like every other movie, and we didn't. And I chose to not talk about them because it's not really my favorite genre. But it was like I saw or Leave Me Like You Found Me, which is about two like 30-year-old hipsters that go into the woods and basically break up with each other. In Our Nature, which was actually another very fine movie with Gabrielle Union and John Slattery and Jenna Maloney about father-son dynamics. Yeah, very good cast. Also taking place in the woods, Pilgrim Song, about a guy who's a country singer who gets laid off as his job as a music teacher and goes on a spiritual journey in the woods. It's like it was a theme. I don't know what it was about this year. Maybe it's because everyone's got these, you know, DSLR cameras and it's just easy to go out and shoot in the woods. You don't need any lights. You could just do it. Maybe that's it. I don't know. I mean, but maybe not for In Our Nature that took place in a cabin, but... I don't know what it was, but it was a South By theme. It was kind of the running joke is, you know, two hipsters go into the woods, and what's the punchline? They made a movie that premiered at South By Southwest in 2012.
Well, that's interesting. So what we're thinking this month is you've just highlighted three films that don't have a distribution necessarily.
Well, Crazy Eyes does. Strand Releasing's going to be bringing that out.
And I'm thinking of films that are on DVD. So let's think about things that are coming to theater for sure. I'm just going to highlight one thing because I know what you're going to talk about for this month.
What's that?
There's this. Well, I think you're going to be talking about Damsels in Distress.
Wow. God, what Stillman,
What's coming up, here's a strange thing. This happens once in a while. It happened with Danny Boyle's film Sunshine, where we have these science fiction films that are relatively big budget, and yet nobody seems to know they're happening. I think this one coming up called Lockout is one of these. With Guy Pearce, it's got Maggie Grace, produced by Luc Besson, and it's about some kind of space prison, and there's a prison break, but it just has a really great, sharp look to it. It looks like it's well acted. We got Guy Pearce holding it down. That's always going to be great. And I'm surprised that there just aren't any trailers on TV about this. I know it's European finance, so it doesn't have the backing of probably a major studio right now.
I think that movie was in limbo, though, because I think it was a Film District movie, or it was one of those studios that I think is in limo. So
yeah, it is.
I think maybe
it says April 13th, so I'm looking for that to happen, but. You know, April's pretty sparse. Yeah. You've got maybe the Cabin in the Woods, the Joss Whedon thing.
Oh, that got that I heard was excellent from a couple different people. It was at South By.
And, of course, Mirror Mirror is another Tarsem film. So,
really? Tarsem's doing comedy.
Comedy, yeah.
You know, Mirror Mirror is one of the movies that people see the poster for, and they're like, oh, it looks stupid. But now it's Tarsem. I guess I should see it.
It looks ridiculous, but, you know, he's such a good visual director. Just for image sake, I got to go see it.
You know, I'm going to go out on a limb, and the gods of cinema will hate me, but... while Damsels in Distress is a movie that I'm looking forward to, although I don't know, there's also Whore's Glory is coming out in very limited release on April 20th, I see at Kino Lober is taking that out, so definitely look for that in New York City. I think we talked about Michael Glauwager last time, very fascinating filmmaker. Yeah, he's a Globalization Trilogy. The mainstream movie, though, to see, also coming out the same day as Titanic, the same weekend as Titanic in 3D, though, for me is going to be American Reunion.
American Reunion, right. Why are you drawn to yet another American Pie movie?
I love those movies, man. I mean, it's one of those things you grow up with. It's comfort food. It's like, you know, they say mom and apple pie. I say Howard Stern and The Simpsons. Those are things I grew up with. They're still here with me. But, you know, I like it. I like those movies. It looks like a lot of fun. It looks like just a good old piece of comfort food. You just sort of like stop in and visit with old friends again.
Right.
You know, it looks like more of the same, you know, but it's, but I saw the trailer for it last night and I got excited again. So, also The Hunter with,
Willem Dafoe.
I saw that at Toronto. That's coming out too. That was pretty good. The new Guy Madden movie, if you really want to keep it Canadian. Another Canadian movie, Surviving Progress, which I saw in Toronto in a regular theatrical release, looks like it's coming out by a first run.
How about Three Stooges? I mean, that's Oscar worthy.
I don't know about that. Bully Goon, another Canadian movie. Goon is coming out with Sean William Scott. So it's a good month for Sean William Scott fans. I think he's one of the most underrated actors in comedy today, truthfully.
Yeah?
I think he's great. I think he should be in more movies. But I don't know what his deal is. What else is coming out? To the Arctic, the new Gentry Freeman IMAX documentary. I'll be there for that. I'm writing my thesis on IMAX. A 5-year engagement, another Apatow comedy. There's a lot of good stuff coming out. April's going to be a pretty good month for comedies and genre flicks anyway, and even indies, you know.
Right.
I don't know when Whit Stillman's movie's coming out. I don't see it on the schedule. Is that in...
Let's see. It looks like, it looks like April 6th.
April 6th. How am I not seeing... Oh yeah, Damsels in Distress, right there. Yeah, that's my most awaited movie. So I mean, it probably won't be in Buffalo. I'll probably have to maybe drive to Toronto to see it on the 7th. But
right,
unless I'm in production on the movie, then we'll have to wait till he comes to the Amherst Theater.
There are worse things to do than
yes,
production on a film.
Yes. No. I'm looking forward to it. Actually, no. I might be in Boston that weekend. Maybe it'll be playing in Boston.
Yeah.
Could be. Great. Hopefully they'll just take it wide and just market it as a broad comedy. Because what Stillman is, he's a broad comedy for people that are educated, really.
Right. Okay.
That's kind of his niche. It should be his niche. It's a comedy not for, you know, like Rick Santorum talks about badly about people that want to go to college.
Right. Wit would be the opposite of that.
Wit would not, yeah. Wit is like not for people that agree with Santorum on that.
Right.
All right, man. So what else is going on?
Well, that's all I'm seeing for April. Wrath of the Titans, of course, coming out.
Ew.
If you got to have a little bit more Sam Worthington, if you can't, you know, see Texas Killing Fields, you might as well see Wrath of the Titans.
Must we deal with Wrath of the Titans?
And inching up pretty close as, you know, the beginning of summer with Avengers.
Avengers, yeah, you're looking forward to that.
Tip top of May, yeah. Well, you know, Joss Whedon again. And
they made a sequel to Women Thou Art Lucid, which was this... on the 7th day, Code Black Entertainment is releasing that. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
Box Office Mojo now.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. I mean, there's Steve Harvey's Think Like a Man. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff coming out.
No Tyler Perry movies.
Well, we just had The Good Deeds, which
I feel like every month we should have a new one.
He makes two a year. He's like Robert Altman. Not with the quality, but with the quantity.
That's
of
true.
Films.
That's true, yeah. Yeah. Or a Woody Allen.
Woody Allen's kind of slowed down a bit. He's doing like one and a half a year.
Yeah, three quarters a year.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Good for him, man. Good for him. Good for Woody. Keeps him young.
Well, what do you got going on this month then?
This month, well, I'm actually presenting my thesis and my written thesis anyway in Boston at the Pop Culture Association. George Takei is the keynote speaker. So
very cool.
Me and George Takei will be presenting at the same conference, but mine's on about IMAX, and then I'll hopefully be in production on the film. So we're still looking for support for that film. And, you know, you were kind enough to give $5. And
of course, yeah.
There's been some other donations coming in, some even anonymous donations. But anybody who backs it, even with a dollar, will get backer credit. So
your name
will be up there in lights. If you back it as anonymous, we'll credit you as anonymous. And if you're a member of the hacktivist group Anonymous, I saw a documentary about them at South By. We won't tell the government that you're contributing.
You're helping out. Yeah, Brendan. Okay.
Yeah, well, we're not a terrorist activity.
Of course.
We're a movie, you know. But,
yeah.
You know, if you're a member of Anonymous, we'll keep it on the DL.
Yeah.
Unless you're going to commit a terrorist activity, then we'll let people know. We'll let the FBI know. All right, man. Well, thanks so much for stopping
by.
How do people get in contact with you? You're on the Twitters, the Facebooks?
Neither.
I'm
just sort of an anonymous type person myself. So
oh, man.
I just have to pick up another Mise en Obscene.
Mise en Obscene, yeah. I'm at www.johnfinkfilms.com as well as indiegogo.com/Brandonwoodfilm and on Twitter at ThinkJohnJ. So.
Okay.
All right, buddy. Thanks for stopping by.
Absolutely.
Good seeing you again.
Listen, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.